The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Coming up after 11 o'clock, we'll have Kieran in studio with the latest business news, previewing the Business Matters podcast. Also, we're going to be hopefully giving you some helpful and useful advice if you think now is the time to stop smoking. You know, I mean, obviously, people try and come up with New Year's resolutions, or they might choose Lent to try and decide how to do it. So if the timing's right for you now, hopefully we'll be able to give you some hope, because it is an incredibly anxious thing to even think about if you're a smoker. Nicotine, an incredibly strong drug, we know that, of course. And even just the mere thought of packing in cigarettes would fill you with trepidation and fear. And then you might have people around you that go, oh, you love smoking so much, you'll never give them up. You'll never give them up. And listen, it's, they don't mean anything bad by it, but it happens. So hopefully we'll be able to support you, give you some useful advice, and sort of help you understand that you can do it if you really want to. And that's the important thing, I think, and it'll probably form part of the conversation after 11, is you kind of have to be in the space where you now want to make sure that you're as healthy as possible into your later life, or that you reach later life. I think it's indisputable the health impact smoking has on people. So maybe today's the day that you go, you know what, I'm going to do it. Well, we're going to bring some advice to you, let you know of the sports that are out there to help you on that journey, and sort of lay out for you when things start to get better, because you've stopped smoking today. Even with the supports that are there, I'm sure it'll be difficult for a day, then the next day, then the next day. But do you know what? By the summer, you could be completely cigarette-free. No smell in your clothes, no smell in your car. You know, some people don't go to things because they don't have access to a cigarette. They might not go to the cinema or go. I know, and I knew personally people that didn't like going on holidays. You know, for a lovely 1 week's holiday, they didn't go on holidays because they couldn't tolerate having to go into an airport and the flight and not having access to a cigarette for 5 or 6 hours. I don't know if that's you, but I certainly know people that were like that. So if you have any questions about packing in smoking, and also I also know there's people out there who, you know, they might feel the only thing I can enjoy is a bloody cigarette, and the people on the radio, you know, I'm switching off. And I get that, and hopefully you don't switch off. I do understand that everyone's in different spaces in their lives with different opinions. But if we can reach, you know, a dozen people who want to give up cigs, doesn't have to be the first day of Lent, but just is a good time to talk about it, then hopefully we'll do something good today, right? What did you give up for Lent, by the way? I'm still working it out. And it's all right, because I haven't done anything yet today, so I can still make a decision. I can pretty much pack everything up because I haven't done anything yet. Drank water, that's about the height of it. Are you giving up anything interesting for Lent? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Well done to the girls from St. Columbus. You should all be very proud of yourselves. So well spoken and explained. And I think we as a county can be proud of them as well. Land tax, a caller says, there's no mention of quarter of an acre. There's no automatic exclusion for the person with 5 acres, and the closing date for exemption from the draft map was the 1st of January 23 past, and you must register and contact revenue if your home is over 1 acre. I did not hear all the interview, but did Councillor Canning explain the big issues, the micro homes and sites, what happened to those homes zoned on the RZLT map that have not paid their HAP? Or explain what happens if someone didn't know and did not pay. So what we're going to do, this is obviously very complex, and it's one of those stories that you realise once you start doing it, it affects an awful lot of people. So this might be one of those where we need to get a panel in or to get some other experts on, so we can field questions, like the very questions put across by that listener. Because if I'm doing something, I want to do it to a point where I don't sow confusion, that we bring answers as much as we can. So leave that with us, please. A caller believes it's nothing but a land grab by government now, but the big question is, who are they going to build homes for? They're all going to settle down. Do you know what I mean? There's a huge demand on housing in this county. All Fianna Fáil councillors were obviously under the whip. Not one of them went to Dublin yesterday. I, for one, who voted Fianna Fáil, will never in my lifetime vote these people that we voted to represent us. Sure, I spotted a couple, at least one or two Fianna Fáil heads, did I not? I just leave that in abeyance just for a moment to make sure I don't misrepresent anyone. Obviously, I think there's going to be disappointment at the turnout. A lot of people didn't go, but I just wanted to double check that no Fianna Fáil councillors went, just to make sure we're as fair as possible. But I wonder what will come from yesterday. I think the things are going to start escalating again. Right. Hi, Greg. Russia would now be totally within its right to target all Irish soldiers since Ireland has become an enemy combatant of Russia and a deadly participant in the Ukrainian war. We have bloodthirsty terrorists running the Dublin government. Democracy and neutrality is now dead in Ireland. This is the last nail in the coffin. Warmongering is now the rule of the land. But look at that comes in from Raymond. I get what you say, Raymond, and that's the reason I asked the question. But, you know, we have facilitated wars in the past. You know, we had, British Army planes flying out over South Donegal to target German U-boats. If that's correct, I think it is. Anyway, we did allow them to fly over our land for better access to drop their bombs rather than having to fly up and around. And there's other examples as well. Shannon's use during the invasions of the Middle East or the actions over there. You know, we've flirted with neutrality. The problem is really a lot of these decisions are made without seeing what the public think, to see what the people think. I'd be interested to see what people within the army think as well. 086 60 25,000. Maybe they are all for it. I don't know. Greg, apparently some government councillors didn't travel to the demonstration in Dublin, so now we have a people before profit party and a party before people's party, which we've had for decades. That's their view on that. We were talking yesterday about Canavan. It's the drug that some people take when pregnant to a Caravan, isn't it? Caravan. Okay. Thank you, Caroline. That the argument being made put across is that this drug is incredibly useful in easing extreme sickness of people who are pregnant, women who are pregnant. But you have to get a prescription from a consultant for it to get it for free. And you often don't see the consultant until later on in the pregnancy. And for some, you know, that's going to be too late in terms of preventing their illness, but also preventing going into hospital. And we were speaking to a GP yesterday who said, look, he can prescribe it, but then there's a huge cost to it and it's very expensive. This caller says, during my pregnancy, I was given an injection for sickness prescribed by GP, administered by the community midwife in the GP surgery. I then developed COVID, so was housebound, felt extremely sick, pregnancy related. I called the GP to see if I could get the oral form of the vaccine to try to help sickness. The nurse in the GP called me back, said we should take nothing for pregnancy sickness. Left me feeling very anxious about the injection I received. My point is education is key. Communication of research will reassure professionals and pregnant women. I'm not sure about the injection. I haven't heard about that. Greg, wonder what today's snowflake music fans would make of the 70s punk band The Sex Pistols and their Nevermind the Bollocks album. We should probably need heart defibrillators and trauma counsellors in every school. That comes in from Jim. But Jim, there's albums and music out now that would make that album by The Sex Pistols sound like church music. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff out there at the moment. That's what I'm saying. You see, we focus on songs like Maybe It's Cold Outside or Fairy Tale from New York, but the chart is full of songs with incredibly offensive language. Now, I don't want that stopped. You know, because people can, you know, I listen to all different types of music. My kids do as well. You know, it doesn't change who they are. It doesn't change their attitudes towards people. But this is in the context of focusing on certain songs and certain books. You know, if you're going to do it across the board, but maybe don't do it. No wonder our hospitals are inundated. We don't put enough funding into community-based care like the, it's not an injection. That is an oral drug, I believe. I'll double check that, but my understanding it was taken orally. But anyway, like that drug Dr. O'Farry mentioned, if such measures can prevent hospital admission, surely funding streams should be available. Same for many cases. Not enough primary care services and funding. Basic GP services, not what they need to be here or in Northern Ireland, causing huge problems. But yesterday, we already came up with situations that could easily be resolved in the pharmacy. And if they're resolved in the pharmacy, the person doesn't have to go to a GP. Going to the GP for a prescription for conjunctivitis, pharmacists can do that. So that frees up spaces in the GP. And if there's spaces in the GPs, that frees up spaces in the ED. And if it frees up spaces in the ED, then hopefully it frees up spaces in the hospital or in terms of people coming out the other way. Do you know what I mean? We're coming up with solutions here. They just need to be taken seriously by the HSC. No, I've just read that. I suffered with hyperemesis in my last pregnancy. It's all consuming. I stood in my GP's office at 8 weeks crying, begging for Caraban. With Caraban, I was able to just about function. It cost me €48 every 10 days. I was still incredibly unwell my entire pregnancy and lost all the joy connected to pregnancy. This needs to be made easily available to all women immediately, and more education about the effects this has on women. And you're quite right too. Caraban, very effective for a lot of people, but for some people, the sickness is so bad that Caraban only takes the edge off it. And there's still hospitalizations and illness and dehydration and all that type of stuff. So Caraban, excellent for some, can only take the edge off it for others. Does anyone in Ballybofey Stranraer have any idea what is going to happen to traffic when this new water main starts on Main Street Stranraer after St. Patrick's weekend for 3 months? It took me 20 minutes this morning to get through the town. No road work. Says the council, any plans in place? Didn't hear about this until now. I think there's certain people on certain roads around Ballybofey Stranraer then are going to see quite a significant increase in traffic. You know, that unofficial bypass that's there. It's not a very safe one, but people are going to use it to avoid any further delays. We'll try and find out. I think it's important to let everyone aware, because a lot of people travel through the two towns as well as live in them, to find out what the story is with these roadworks. We'll certainly work on that and bring it to you well in advance of their commencement date. Okay, we're joined on the lines now by Elaine McGinley, Community Development Worker with Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning.
And also joining us, Joanne Fullerton, Development Worker with Better Together Communities in Partnership Programme with the TRIACS Neighbourhood Management Team. Hiya, Joanne.
Hello there.
Right, can you talk to us about the TRIACS Neighbourhood Management Team? It's an interesting name, or the TRIACS initiative.
So that's the organization that I'm working for to roll out this cross-border program called Better Together, which is funded for the International Fund for Ireland. And so I can tell you a little bit about that program now, if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so we're rolling it out in four different cross-border communities. That's Calais, Lifford, Buncrana, and Muff. And that will be throughout 2023. We're providing all sorts of training options to build the capacity of third sector organisations and groups and residents in those areas.
Now, what are they though? What was the phrase you used? Third level or third?
So your third sector organisations. Yeah. So your community groups and organisations and the training areas as well. So you're talking about training and first aid, committee skills, health and safety, but we're also open to any suggestions that the communities themselves would identify as training gaps. You know, so for example, child protection, like that would be a necessary training for anyone who wants to be working in the community sector.
And the cross-border element of this, Joanne, sorry, yeah. If people are sort of looking to establish things, there has to be a cross-border element of it, obviously, to fall under this program, I'd imagine.
Yeah, 100%. So the other aspect that of the program that we've got funding allocated to is allotment regeneration, gardening classes, cooking classes, and road safety workshops, but also cancer awareness. So like the Pink Ladies, who's one of our partners, the Pink Ladies Cancer Support Group, they operate in Derry and are looking to expand their reach to the Donegal area. So, you know, you're getting your cross-border aspect through linking these organizations on a cross-border basis and addressing the shared needs that communities all along the border are experiencing.
Elaine McGinley, do you have a particular interest in a particular development?
Yeah, I'm interested in organizing a ladies group in Lifford. We're delighted to be involved in this Better Together program. It gives us great opportunity in the Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre to get women in Lifford together in the one room. I suppose personally, thinking on if I needed to get involved in a group, I would have to go to Strabane, whether it was breastfeeding support or any of those just simple wee things. Strabane's the nearest place to us Lifford ladies, or Letterkenny. And I think it's time that we had a ladies group in Lifford. Mm. There's great support for it and interest in it. And I suppose being the county town too, we could do with some more focus groups in Lifford. You know, you talked there earlier about hyperemesis. I suffered from that myself too in three pregnancies. And there was no group of women that I could have went to yeah. to talk about this other than talk to a doctor. So I think it would be great. This Better Together program really does give us the chance to get women together and to continue this cross-border connection with Lifford Anstermand and Derry and other places as well. But for us in the Lifford Clonley Resource Centre, we're definitely focusing on a women's group to be to come out of this Better Together program.
Yeah, and it can be a very lonely place when you're suffering with something, and you know, obviously your GP supports you as best you can, but they're a medical professional and they're waiting to see the next patient. To have the support of other people that understand would certainly, and that's just one example and a very fine one as well. Is there a sense that Lifford sort of, you know, in terms of service provision or supports up until now, Elaine, has been, well, sure, look, it's available across the border, or sure, it's only a trip down to Letterkenny. That's not really the reality. That to some extent, you know, that Lifford's been a little bit left behind with some of these services and others.
Yeah, I think so. Don't get us wrong, we're very happy to go to Strabane, and we have great connections in Strabane through family and, you know, education and things like that, and we'll always be linked to Strabane. But I think that it's time that Lifford, maybe we are a wee bit forgotten. We are the county town, and sometimes people forget about that and things move to other areas of Donegal. But I think even just in the community sector, we need to start to stick together ourselves. And I think it's even to start with this women's group, I feel that it's a good start for us, you know, and we can progress from that. Yeah. We can organise other groups from that. I think when a crowd of good women get together in the one room, sure, who knows what the possibilities are.
Endless. All right, Joanne, so this is a perfect example then of a good project, perhaps a qualifying project. So do you want to give us some more examples, or maybe a call to action for people listening out there that might be able to engage with TRIACS to their benefit?
Yeah, definitely. Well, so specifically about for Lifford, we have a Pink Ladies workshop on the next Monday on the 27th at 10:30 a.m. And they're going to be looking at understanding your feelings and emotions throughout a cancer diagnosis, or perhaps even if you're one of the supporting friends or family members of someone with a cancer diagnosis. And they'll also be talking about managing stress and keeping a journal on your self-esteem and confidence. Everyone's welcome to that. It's not just for women, but it's all for men and women and people of all ages. And then just more broadly for the program as a whole, we also have our launches coming up. We had our first launch there in Lifford on the 13th, and it was really great. It was a very vibrant afternoon, lots of different people discussing, you know, the opportunities in Lifford that they can get throughout as a result of the program. But going forward now, on the 7th of March, we have our launch in Buncrana. That's in St. Mary's Hall at 2 to 4 p.m. And then on the 25th of March, we have our MUF launch, which is in the Resource Centre, again at 2 to 4 p.m. And tonight, we have the Calais launch, which is in the Football Club between 7 and 9 p.m.
And who should attend these launches, Joanne?
Okay, so community groups from those areas. But also, if any community groups from other areas want to come in. So, for example, we had the Mill River Conservation Group come up to Lifford, and it was really great to see the synergies between that group who are addressing the health of rivers and also the Pink Ladies who are addressing the health of people through our environmental awareness. And the pollution in our environment that can have an effect on our bodies. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really about making as many different connections as possible and bridging as many different residents and community groups.
All right, Joanne, if anyone wants more information about the TRIACS Neighbourhood Partnership, or, you know, a list of upcoming of events or anything I might have missed out in terms of my questioning, where should people contact, or is there an online resource?
Yeah, so we have the usual social media platforms, so Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. You can also get me in the office on 04871 261916, or by email, which is joanne@triaxneighbourhoodmanagementteam.org.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Elaine?
No, just that the people of Lifford hopefully get behind us in this and come to the Lifford Clonleigh Resource Centre and support the local area, and let's push Lifford forward.
Yeah. Listen, the greatest advances in our towns and villages come from the local community organising. You know, that truth be told, and then maybe going to seek support from local elected representatives or funding agencies or bodies. But the real work begins when the community gets together and identifies what's needed and works together to sort of achieve that. And great things are being achieved all the time right across the region. So keep up the great work, Elaine. Thanks for your time this morning. Great to chat to you.
Thank you.
All right. And same to you, Joanne Fullerton. Lovely to speak to you as well. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, take care. That's Elaine McGinley there, community development worker with Lifford Clonleigh Resource Centre, and Joanne Fullerton, who's a development worker. If you want any of the contact details that were listed there, get in touch with us. We'll retain them here and pass them on to you. All right, if you were listening to Community Garda information yesterday, you would have heard Garda Grania seeking the public's assistance in relation to the theft of 24 sheep from a farm in East Donegal. The sheep were at Ballybow, St Johnston. 19 sheep were male, 5 were female, black in colour, sorry. 5 were black in colour and they were female. The theft took place between 5 p.m. on Wednesday, February 15th, and 11 a.m. on Friday, February 17th. Now we're joined on the programme by Adrian Gallagher, Chair of the IFA Sheep Committee in Donegal. Good morning to you, Adrian. Thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, Greg.
Right.
Good morning to your listeners.
As we sort of said yesterday, a significant enough operation that maybe someone might have noticed something overnight. Does this kind of crime come as a surprise to you and your members?
Well, I suppose as a sheep farmer, Greg, it probably doesn't come as a surprise. Most of us would have experienced this in the past, you know. Unfortunately, it happens, and we're quite restricted in what we can do. And the SBA has to catch them and the act, you know.
Where are these sheep being sold? You know, where's the money in these sheep? You know, like, it's not like me that I would steal them, Adrian, and all of a sudden, if I had a front garden, what I mean, that there'd be 25 sheep there. So what's going on?
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's one of the facts. One of the facts is the person that has taken them, they must be a registered flock owner. So they must have a herd number, and they must be able to offload these sheep, so they must have an outlet for them, right? They must be a registered owner, and they must have local knowledge in the area. So to offload them, obviously, they're meant to be, all sheep are tagged, when they're electronically tagged, and sheep must follow, if you sell them, they must have a dispatch docket, so there's a paper trail there, what sheep that are sold, be it farm to farm, or into the factories, or to the marts. So there should be a paper trail. Now, if sheep are stolen, obviously you're getting them for nothing. So they're prepared to take any kind of money, because any money is a profit for you.
All right, but let me ask you then. So there's 25 sheep, right? There's 25 tags. Those tags are removed. 25 tags have to come from somewhere. So
exactly.
As far as the database is concerned, or the body that distributes these tags, where did the new 25 replacement tags come from them, and who can apply for them?
Exactly, yeah. And this is where that the DVO do have an input here. I mean, everything is dispatched and everything's recorded. So if you're, I mean, all of a sudden seeking new tags this time of year, then that should be raising alarm bells, what the department and would say, in this case, in RFO, you know. They would be aware of it. So, yeah, that is one of the outlets that you could go down the avenue with and see. Because, yes, farmers generally just order the tags for the newborn lambs that are coming out, we'll say, in April or May, when they're tagging them. So generally, they'll order enough tags to cover their lambs, or the newborn lambs, into their flock every year. So that would be one avenue that the DVO could look at, to see who is seeking tags in different times of the year, or seeking more tags than they would expect to breed in terms of lambs, you know. So certainly, yeah, that's one avenue, or one would say opportunity for them to go out and look and seek information on it.
What do you think happens to... Well, let's not talk about this because we don't want to complicate an investigation. So we'll just say it happened tonight, right? Another 25 sheep were stolen. Where are they likely to be going, do you think? Are they loaded into a lorry and taken to Louth or Tyrone or...
Well, there's... It depends on the sheep that are taken. If the sheep are factory fit, then the chances are they've gone to the factory.
Mm.
You know? And there's only a handful of factories killing sheep in Ireland. So, I mean, if you have a suspect, it'd be very simple to ring up the factory and see that suspect X supply stock.
Well, Adrian, can I go back to the tags here, right? Because say, for instance, I stole 25 sheep.
Yeah.
I would need those tags to be sitting around for some while, wouldn't I? Surely there'd be a red flag if a newly issued tag, are they dated? If it turned up at a mark, do you get where I'm coming from? Like, there seems to be this loopholes here that could be closed.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't be dated. Tags aren't dated,
right,
but I mean, if I go and seek tags today, I order up, say, 250 EAD tags today, right? There's a record of them now. What day or when I enter them into the sheep's ears then is not recorded, you know, so there won't be a record that way. Obviously, somebody has taken the sheep. The chances are they've gone to the factory. They've probably re-tagged and gone down and somebody else's flock number, you know.
Yeah.
And they're killed that way. But, you know, there is a paper trail there. And there is an opportunity for the guards, the DVO, and the factory and the farmer to work together and try and look at this and come to some kind of conclusion, you know.
All right. So in your mind, what is the function of the tag? You know, why were tags introduced?
Well, the function of the EAD tag is for traceability.
Yeah, you see there. You see, this is why the powers that be need to crack down on this. Then, so because it's clearly not working. Because we have this is one instance. How many sheep are stolen annually? So there are a lot of sheep being traded, entering the food supply, presumably, they're stolen sheep with fake tags, effectively. So they need to, you know, to maintain the integrity of the sheep meat market, the lamb market here, then they need to seriously crack down on this themselves.
Yeah, that's true, Greg, I say, and this is where I'm coming from. I mean, the DVO and the Department of Agriculture need to be a lot more stringent on who's seeking tags and on particular times of the year, and to see and to quiz and why they're seeking tags and why they're seeking tags beyond their number of, let's say, of expected lambs to be born on a particular flock. And if those red flags and the DVO do come out and do inspections, they do inspections if you haven't ordered tags in the last year or two, and they will do inspections too if you're ordering additional tags. So, I mean, the DVO do come out and do it, and whether what the outcome is on it, I have no experience of that. But you're right in saying that it's an opportunity for farmers to go out. I mean, obviously, when sheep are re-tagged, I mean, you've no records then of what medicines they've been used, or whether they're in a withdrawal that could have been dosed the previous week, and maybe they weren't actually fit for slaughter, but the person that's taking them obviously not going to know this, and they're going to head straight to the slaughter. So there is a risk there as well. Where stock could be entering into the food chain that may shouldn't be.
And it's particularly annoying too, because you know,
absolutely,
as much as anyone, Adrian,
absolutely,
the amount of effort and care that goes into raising sheep to keep and protect them from dogs and every other bloody thing that's going on.
Yeah.
All the money that it costs to medicate them, to feed them, and then to know that they're taken from you and could be sold for pittance, really, because as you say,
absolutely,
you know, whoever steals them, that they're going to pass them off. It does, you know. I don't know what the second-hand stolen market might be, but it's a real sickler for the farmer.
If they're going to go to the factory with them, they'll get the factory price on the day for them, price per kilo. So I mean, they're happy enough. I suppose from a farming point of view, it'd be important for us to lock all gates. There's no harm in installing CCTV or even the sample trail cameras are very, very, very effective, you know. And I suppose it's good too if you have out farms to inform the neighbours and the locality. I mean, normally, if they say you feed your sheep at a particular time, then make them aware that you'll be on the farm at a particular time or at your particular type of jeep. And if you see any different jeeps other than your own, to let you know, or just to take the registration of it or whatever, like, you know, and inform you that there was somebody up looking at them super in that lane at a particular time, you know. So it's important for farmers to be vigilant and to go out, we'll say, and check your stock, you know, quite often, like, you know. I mean, in the case we had last week where the person, you know, he had a very short window there on, he knows when the stock had disappeared, like, so that's good, like, because you could follow that up very quickly, like, you know.
Mm. And I suppose, you know, the farming community and we as the broader community as well, which many, many of the farming community are connected to it, have to keep our eyes out as to, you know, does something look a little bit odd, a little bit out of place? You know, ring your neighbour and say, were you moving sheep last night or whatever livestock it might be? You know, I think we're going to have to do our bit to sort of make Donegal an unattractive place for people to do this, because it's one case after another. We were speaking to a farmer not too long ago who had a lot of sheep stolen from the Barnes Small Gap area. And I mean, the people stealing these sheep know what they're doing. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. You have to see what's going on, who's about at what times, you know, round them up, get them in, get them away, pass them off. Do you know what I mean? There's obviously very experienced professional people, not giving them any credit, who are involved in this. So we're going to have to do our bit too.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it's very important to the neighbours. Yeah, they do look out, actually. Yeah. And the person does and must have local knowledge. They must have an out.
But that's even worse, though, if there's no local knowledge, Adrian.
Yeah.
You know.
It is, actually, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's what happens. Nobody come out from Cork or carry them up here to steal sheep.
Yeah, okay, well, that's worrying, but you're right, of course, and you know best.
I mean, the income from a sheep farmer is very, very low at the moment, like, you know.
Well, look, if you've a certain amount, you're probably doing it because out of tradition or love or something. You're not doing it to pay your mortgage. You know, I mean, obviously there's different scales, but, you know, and there's a lot of money has to go out to get them to the point where they were stolen. All right, Adrian, listen, thanks for that. I appreciate your time.
Thanks
I wish
very
we
much
talked about something else, but you know yourself. Nathan. All right, Adrian Gallagher, he's chair of the IFA Sheep Committee. Again, anyone, any information, get these sheep back to its owner. The theft took place between 5 p.m. on Wednesday, February 15th, and 11 a.m. on Friday, February 17th. They were taken from Ballybough, St. Johnston. According to the Garda information, 12 of the sheep had a red marking sprayed on their head, 4 had blue sprayed on their back, 19 sheep were male, and 5 black in colour were female. Right, okay. Greg, good morning. Good morning to you too, Martin. Does anyone know what was meant by the answer to Greg's question to Paul Canning as to why he didn't attend yesterday's meeting regarding the defective block scandal? He said he'll speak to his colleague about it. I'm not sure if he's referencing Minister Charlie McConnell over there, but the answer is on the record for you. There's a scam going around. Your package cannot be delivered and you have to follow a link. The number is, and they give a number here. The number's irrelevant because they can clone the number. Don't click a link about packages in your texts, please. There's a few going around still. In conclusion, with something so important that could affect your future as a nation, I truly believe a referendum is only appropriate in the circumstances that are potentially that for the future of the nation. And I presume you're talking about neutrality there. It might be one they're afraid to ask the public on. I think the majority of people truly believe we're actually a neutral nation, both in terms of, you know, politically as well as, you know, in terms of foots on the ground. But we're not. We've taken a side, and taken a side quite strongly, to the point whereby we're training up Ukrainian soldiers and we're sending out stuff, as I say, like flak jackets and that type of thing. Or maybe they could hold a referendum and there'd be a 35% turnout because people don't really care. I don't know the answer, but you wouldn't know unless you ask, I suppose. Right, okay, let's say hello to Councillor Jackie Healy-Ray. Good morning to you, Councillor. Thanks very much for taking the call today.
Good morning to you, Greg, and to everyone in Donegal this morning.
Right, we were going through figures not so long ago in Donegal, and they're not a million miles away from the figures you received from Kerry County Council. It revealed 23% of those offered accommodation solutions from either Kerry County Council properties or approved housing bodies properties turned them down. You've described them as laughable and unreasonable reasons. Tell us a bit more about it.
So yes, so as you stated, Greg, 23% of housing offers given to applicants in 2022 were refused. And when you're refusing a local authority house, you have to give a reason as to why you're doing so. And some of the reasons that Kerry County Council outlined to me at our meeting on Monday were simply really laughable in that one person, for example, turned it down because there wasn't enough room for their motorbike. Another person turned down a house because it was an older house and wasn't a brand new house. These reasons, certainly in a housing crisis, and the one that we have, which has people in dire need of accommodation across the country, is totally unacceptable. And I have no problem with people who require housing and have certain needs. We have situations in Kerry sometimes where the county council don't always get it right, Greg. Mm. Sometimes houses are offered to people that are wholly unsuitable because, for example, they might have a child with special needs, or there might be an older person that needs certain adaptations to the house, and that the house isn't suitable. And while those are far and few between, they do happen and slip through the cracks sometimes. Mm. But for somebody to turn down the offer of a housing solution simply because the house isn't brand new, or because there isn't enough room for their motorbike, or because there is the garden shed out the back isn't big enough, that to me is just certainly unacceptable, because there's a big difference between housing need and housing want. And unfortunately, given the unprecedented crisis that we have in this country at the moment, local authorities across the country cannot put up a catalogue in front of applicants and say, oh yes, flick through that there, see which one suits you, and come back to us.
So do We're you think, so let's say there is a scenario, right, and just, there was a recent development in Buncrana, the most recent figures I have, and the houses were offered, and 23% refusal rate there as well. So it's an interesting that the figures are quite similar. But let's just say there's a scenario whereby there's a family living in a house, right? And it's a private loaned house, but they're getting assisted by the council in paying the rent, and they're on the housing waiting list. Do you think there is a particular problem that they feel that they're in a decent housing situation and they're prepared to wait for their forever home, and they're prepared to turn down homes that don't match that criteria? Do you think that's a lot of what's happening, or what do you think is leading to this level of refusals?
No, given the reasons that were provided to me by Kerry County Council, that doesn't seem to be the reason.
Yeah, but where are the people living then, Jackie, do you think? Do you know what I mean? Where are you living whereby you could turn down, you know, long-term accommodation because it doesn't house your motorbike? Do you get me?
But again, I don't believe that the root of the problem is that they're living in a rented property that is suiting their needs at the moment. No, don't get me wrong. I would imagine that some of that could be the issue, because another reason that was given by Kerry County Council for someone refusing a house was because it was an approved body house rather than a Kerry County Council property. And again, that reason doesn't wash with me.
Okay.
Because the only reason why somebody would turn down what I call an AHB house as opposed to a local authority house is because you cannot buy an AHB house. Now, while I support everybody's right and entitlement to have the aspiration to one day own your own home, in Kerry, anyway, especially at the moment, if the local authority build a brand new house, you can't purchase that either. It's not eligible through the tenant purchase scheme. So therefore, you're not going to own that property either. And the reason that Kerry County Council don't sell those properties is because those properties are to such a high standard of finish that there's no comparative property on the market in Kerry. Therefore, they've nothing to put it up against to compare and contract. And they'd be selling at such a discounted price compared to the investment that they're asked to put into these developments. So it's not feasible for them to be selling those types of houses.
All right. Do you have any rules in place whereby they're, you know, maybe you're allowed one refusal? Or what's the story in Kerry County Council?
The current rule at the moment is that in any 12-month period, if you turn down the offer of two houses, you're then suspended for 12 months off the housing list. That, to me, seems very relaxed and flexible. I think if you're offered a house that suits your housing needs, not your housing wants, your housing needs, and if you subsequently refuse that, I don't believe that you should be considered for another property. You should be put that back down to the bottom of the list, because I have plenty of people that are coming to me, Greg, on a daily basis that would gladly take the offer of a house.
So
statistics came out yesterday.
Yeah.
I've had people on the phone to me saying, where are these houses being turned down? Because I'll take them.
Yeah, well, listen, as I say, backed in and shown another set of stats here. 35 to 40% of offers turned down. That was an increase on recent years. Those are the latest figures I could grab here from our news site. That was in June 2021. So just finally, where are these people living then? Do you believe their scenarios might be that they can turn down houses for some of the reasons that you've given? You know, they're not clearly couch surfing, or are they living on the...
I'll tell you what it is in a lot of cases. It's an over-exaggerated sense of entitlement because they seem to think that, oh, there's a certain development that has been built up here, they're brand new houses, they'll turn their nose up at the offer of an older house. Because they say, no, despite the fact that they might actually dearly need the accommodation, they're saying to themselves, no, I'm not going to live on that side of town, or else, no, I'm not going to take an older house because it's older, I'm going to wait for the new house.
All right, thanks very much for your time, Councillor Jackie Healy-Ray there.